Welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast, the global mini golf podcast. Hear from some of the best players in the sport. Look ahead to some of the biggest tournaments and have a chance to win some amazing prizes. And now your hosts, Andrew Edmonds and Simon Brown.
Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, is my good friend and co-host. You're never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hola. Nice to be back.
How are you?
Not bad. Not too bad. I have a little bit of a head cold, which might come over, might not. But other than that, good. Yes.
Okay, so what we wanted to do, we've spoken a lot recently about mini golf tournaments, the side of the sport that takes it really competitively, really seriously. So we want to take a bit of a break from all that and discuss the more fun aspect of it, visiting the courses for enjoyment, just having a bit of fun to experience some unique courses. So we've got a guest with us today who's a perfect guest for it. Someone who has visited over 1,000 mini golf courses.
Yes, I think for a lot of us, before we even get into mini golf in a competitive standpoint, we may have stumbled upon a certain blog in the internet. And that blog is hosted by today's guest. And it will chronicle the 1,000 courses he's now visited. They're all over the UK and further afield. And at some point, we've all looked at it. Often, it's one of the first places I look when somebody mentions a course I don't know.
So what we wanted to do, just for a bit of fun, is take us and take the listeners on a little bit of a virtual road trip, visiting some of these courses. So think of it as like the ultimate day of mini golf fun. We visit a lot of courses. The best way to follow along with this for our listeners, in the show notes, which is in the comments under the Facebook post for this episode, we'll share details of all of the courses we discuss and pictures. So as we're talking about them, you can kind of look at the pictures as we go and get a sense of what we're talking about. So that will be the best way to follow along. Before we bring out our guest, we've just got time for my favorite part of the episode. That's where we thank our Patreon supporters for helping us support the podcast. So thank you very much to champion of the podcast, Sevi Kukialka, for your support. We really do appreciate it, and it helps us keep on delivering this content. So please welcome to the podcast someone who has visited over 1,000 mini golf courses, a really enthusiastic player of mini golf. We're absolutely delighted to be talking to him today. Please welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast, Richard Gottfried. Hello, Richard.
Hello. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming. Yeah, we're really good. Thank you. We're really good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Yeah, relaxing. Surprisingly, not at a mini golf course this weekend. But yeah, taking it easy. Taking it easy.
Oh, good to hear. So we've asked you to join us today to take us on a sort of mini golf road trip. So you can imagine we've got like a time machine. We can go anywhere in the world. We can go to any time. And we'd like to see some interesting and exciting mini golf courses. Just before we start that journey, though, can you tell us a little bit about your blog and your travels?
Yeah. So been going since 2006, end of September 2006, when we were down in Southsea at Treasure Island Adventure Golf. And at the end of a game against my wife, Emily, my little brother, Christopher, and some of his friends, we stepped up to the lucky last hole. And on the lucky last hole, you get to win a free game. And I fired the cannon on this pirate ship, and I won a free game. Wow. So we went back the next day. And then, 16 years later, I'm still playing mini golf all the time because of that that one bit of luck. Although I say it's still skill. I've won a few free games on that same hole since then. But and from there, at the time, you know, back in 2006, there were around 600 courses, and we thought, oh, that's quite interesting. Mostly at seaside, so let's have a travel around, see where we can go. And then, yeah, we hit 600, and then found, you know, the game's getting more and more popular, and it's never ending. It's a never ending quest to visit every course in the UK, and now the wider British Isles, and then the world beyond as well.
Okay, let's jump into our fantastic time machine, can travel anywhere around the world machine, and let's start this road trip together. For anyone listening, don't worry, we're not thinking about changing the past or anything like that. This will just be used purely for mini golf purposes. Okay, Richard, you're at the controls. Over to you.
The coordinates need to be set for St. Andrews, Scotland.
Okay, and first place, St. Andrews, Scotland. I've just popped
my St. Andrews, Scotland. And the date is 1867.
Okay, perfect.
We're travelling back in time. I don't know if you've got any sound effects for this time machine, but as we go through the ether, back in time, we're there. And what we're there to see is the Himalayas, which is the world's first miniature golf course. So it's a grass putting course. Uh-huh. And I think it'd just be an interesting place for us to visit.
Perfect. Let's go. It's quite a modern time machine, so you won't hear any noise from it. It just runs really quietly. So no sound effects or anything like that, because our budget doesn't quite go that far. But so let's just say it's a really quiet time machine, and we've arrived at St. Andrews. First mini golf course, we step out. What do we see?
We see a nine hole, I believe it was, a nine hole layout. And you probably would find that it's quite similar that if you were to how it looks now, that there is still here in 2022 a nine hole layout and an 18 hole layout. But what would be the most striking is the fact that it's not carpet or felt. It's not an artificial surface, but it's a grass surface, but cut and maintained to be as fine a putting carpet, as fine a putting surface as you're likely to find. And the interesting thing about the course, we, as gentlemen, would probably be very unlikely to be allowed to play the course.
Okay.
Because the game of miniature golf was, and the Himalayas and the putting course was created specifically for members of the ladies' putting club at St. Andrews, because it was seen as unladylike for ladies to play big golf or regular golf. So they needed an alternative. And that's where the Himalayas putting course was created. And the ladies' putting club, still there, still exists today, still holds competitions. And the course now is obviously open to the public. And probably I would say one of the most reasonably priced courses you can play. When we played there in 2012, you couldn't get me away from the course. I was just playing round after round after round, pretty much until I could score a hole in one. and then I could leave, because it is, some of the holes are so, so tough. But I think, see, the reason to go back there, A, it's the first course. It's a real point in history. And, you know, without it, mini golf, miniature golf would have, it probably would have existed, but maybe in a different way. But you kind of want to go right back to the start, where it all began, and just, yeah, see how it looked then and compare it to now.
Okay, that was, so the first ever mini golf course at St. Andrews. We didn't get to play. We only had a watch. Richard, where are we off to next?
I think we'll jump ahead to the future, but not too far into the future. Okay. I think one of the traditional classic seaside resorts, we're off to Skegness in Lincolnshire. So we're staying in the UK, but we're moving down the country to Skeggy. South Parade, and the year 1926. And the reason being, this is England's first crazy golf course.
Right.
So okay. Again, it's another site of historical interest. And again, there is still, or was, at least the last time I went, a course still in the same location on South Parade. That itself had been there for probably 30, 40, maybe even 50 years. It was like a wooden-based course with wooden obstacles sat on top of concrete, which was most definitely not the original layout of the area. Mm-hmm. And then it was changed and had some fiberglass objects and obstacles added to it, including a fiberglass cow, which has got nothing to do with anything, which is quite often the case with the world of crazy golf courses, isn't it? You'll find an obstacle that has nothing to do with anything. So, again, it's another one for me. You know, I want to see what courses were like, especially when there's a course that's been in the same location over a number of years. But you kind of want to see, what did it look like when it was being built, when it first opened? And also, you know, it would be interesting to see Skegness back in the day as well. I mean, it's a fun seaside resort, and it's, I think the last count is around 10 courses there now, maybe 11 courses. So it is, you know, it is a real mini golf hotspot. So well worth a trip there. But again, just to have a look and see the first, we're getting to 1926. So the same thing's happening in the US as well. There are more of these artificial courses being created with not necessarily wacky obstacles, but there are some different obstacles. It's not just putting over hills and bumps and lumps. You're starting to find tunnels, loops, ramps, and other various obstacles as well. So Skeggy, 1926.
Okay, so we've been to the first ever mini golf course and then to the first crazy golf course. Where to next, Richard?
Well, I'm going to take a bit of a... I'm going to tweak the navigation a bit. So okay. I was going to travel to somewhere else, but no, we'll come back to that one, I think. Okay. So what was going to be number five on my list will become number three on my list. So so that was the first crazy golf course in the country. The next course I'd like to go to is the first crazy golf course I ever played.
Okay.
Which is in my hometown of Abingdon in Oxfordshire.
Yep.
And it's at the Abbey Meadows next to the River Thames. So years-wise, it could be any year. The 1980s would be good because that's when I first played crazy golf, and when I first played then, you know, our clothes might not look that bad in the 80s or 90s, what we're wearing now, so we might not need to go for a wholesale change this time. But yeah, let's set the coordinates there.
Okay, and this course is still up today, so we could visit it today as well.
Unfortunately, not, and this is one of the reasons why I do want to revisit it. Unfortunately, it was removed, and a playground has been put in its place. Okay. But in the Abbey Meadows, there used to be a crazy golf course. Next to it was a putting course, and then there was a pitch and putt as well. So it was a three courses all in one spot. Fantastic fun. Definitely not the best course in the world. And did manage to play it a few more times in the 2010s, and you know, played it before it was removed. But it was one of those courses that I would say is traditional British crazy golf, in that it was quite unplayable. Really frustrating, made of concrete, but it was made of concrete that was more like tarmac, so it was more like putting along a path, and it had metal rails. So it was kind of like somebody had gone to continental Europe in the 1950s. I think they'd seen a beton course, so concrete, to give it the official name, obviously, but beton concrete course, and they'd seen that. Maybe took a photo of it, come back, and then said, I'm going to build my own. But they didn't put any carpet down. They didn't smooth the concrete. So you putted the ball, and it would bobble all over the place. One of the holes, it was the, there was like a lot of sinkage and some silence on the course, so the ball would be down in this puddle, this huge ditch. But again, I have such happy memories of playing there when I was a kid, with my family, very competitive with my brothers. So I do remember playing it. And you know, when that's your course and you know no better, I think it's the best, most exciting, fun thing in the world to go and have a game of crazy golf. And I think, you know, it's nice to have those memories and have those courses. And it's a shame that it was removed rather than being renovated, or the space being used for, or part of that space being left over for a crazy golf course. But again, the playground that's there, fine. Again, we were there recently and with my brother and his daughter, and she was running around all over the course. And while we were watching her on the swings and everything, part of the playground, you can still see some of the ditches and tunnels that are still there that they have kept, and some of the concrete that has been kept. So if you know, you know. But yeah, apart from that, the course is long gone, which is a shame.
Okay, so leaving from Abingdon in Oxfordshire, where to next?
I think we've got to head overseas. I think we've stayed here for a bit too long now, I think. So I think we're heading over to the USA.
Okay.
And we're going to go to Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, somewhere that I've not been, but is definitely on my mini golf bucket list. And it's known as the capital of mini golf, really, isn't it? There are dozens of courses there. I mean, it's quite difficult to find a definitive number of courses. It's something, trying to find out, is it 30, 50, 60? You know, some of the course venues, course locations, they've got multiple courses. You know, one venue's got 3, 4, 5 courses. Yep. You know, so how many are there? Who knows? Only those people that have been. But I think we're going to have to, again, at least we have got a time machine. We won't have to take a month or two off work to travel over there and spend time playing all of the courses, because it would take you that much time to play every single course in the area. And I just think it's got to be on everyone's mini golf to-do list, hasn't it? To go somewhere that has got so many courses to play.
Well, I know we do have listeners of this podcast that are familiar with the Myrtle Beach area, because we have discussed it before. So if you are familiar and you'd like to recommend Richard some courses, Richard, I'm sure it'd be greatly received. Please do get in touch with Richard and maybe suggest what courses are must-sees for his visit to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, I think it's a place on a lot of people's mini golf bucket list, because obviously it does host the US Masters across, I believe it's 3 courses at the moment. Mm-hmm. But that for me to visit creates a bit of an odd juxtaposition. As much as I enjoy the competing, I still just love the game. Mm-hmm. And the thought of going out there for a couple of weeks to just play the same courses over and over to play in the tournament, that would be tinged with disappointment when you know there's a few dozen other courses. I believe there is 60 plus, from what I've been told. And yeah, to go and play 3 courses for 2 weeks, that would disappoint me.
I think it's one of the things we found, you know, we played on the BMGA Tour for a number of years, 2007 to 2015. When we used to go to you know, trips down to Hastings or up to Blackport or Weymouth or, you know, wherever we were going to, the aim was always on the, it's as much as the time we spent there at the tournament, that's great. And we did put in our practice, paid off sometimes, didn't pay off other times. But you're travelling there. What else are you going to see and do on the way? You know, mini golf has taken us to lots and lots of different towns, cities, villages, places we never knew existed, places that aren't even on the map, that are on the map now because they've got a crazy golf course there. And while we're down at courses, so again, it'd be one of those things that if you were going there and probably trying to win the US Masters, you would have to spend a week, 2 weeks there, but a lot of that time playing and mapping out the course. If you could combine the two and try and be competitive, but while you're there, you know, tap into the... I think it's a missed opportunity, isn't it, if you don't tap into all of the other courses that are in the area and play some variety as well. And I expect, much same as in the UK, there's the good, the bad and the ugly of mini golf. In Myrtle Beach, I expect there's some really, really quirky courses that would just be, you know, mind-blowing. There's going to be some historic ones and there's going to be some really technical courses as well. So just be a nice mixture, I think. And that's the one thing that keeps me coming back to playing mini golf is the fact it's variety. You know, if it was just every course was exactly the same, why would you bother? You know, you need variety. And I think this is what Crazy Golf offers. It is just a huge variety of different places to play.
So I'm loving this day so far. We've had quite a contrast, starting from the putting green, the first ever mini golf course, eventually ending up where we are now in Myrtle Beach with these giant volcanoes and palm trees and everything like that, with all their, as you say, quirky mini golf courses. Richard, where to next?
This one's a bit of a toss-up. I think we'll come back to, because we can travel time and space and everything. We don't need to stay in the USA. We'll come back to UK in Hastings.
Okay.
We've got Hastings, East Sussex. So a place that I've spent many, 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 many hours indeed. Like probably many of your listeners will have spent many, many hours at Hastings putting around. And the year, well, it'll probably be the 80s or 90s, I think. Again, we can play it now and it's fantastic. And there are three courses, and I know the Crazy Golf has had some bit of a makeover on a few of the holes. But I'd be interested to go back to time when there was a putting course there, and also when there was the Crazy Golf in its most original, purest Arnold Palmer form, and also maybe it's the masochist in me, I would like to go back to play the miniature golf course that was there, that was one of the original courses that when the World Crazy Golf Championships was played down in Hastings back in the day when it started. It was played, you play one round on the Crazy Golf, the Arnold Palmer, and you play one round on the miniature golf course. And for people that remember playing that tournament back in the day, it probably give them nightmares. Some people enjoyed it. Very, very crazy people enjoyed it. I never enjoyed playing it. But when I look back and think what that course was and how you could hone your putting skill on it, and we played British Championships on it as well. But I'd like to go back to a time when, and I don't know if it was possible, if there was a time when all those three courses were there all in one place at the same time, but just seeing, again, old postcards and old photos of what the area and the course looked like. But again, it makes for a nice comparison because Hastings has really evolved with the times and, you know, creating one of the first adventure golf courses in the country with their existing adventure golf, and then the Pirate course, which has hosted many tournaments as well. But they've always retained the Arnold Palmer, the Crazy Golf, with, and I think that is it's a classic test of putting skill. But then I think the miniature golf course that was there as well was that was probably one of the biggest challenges on the mini golf on the BMJ tour back in the late 2000s, early 2010s. It was nuts. I remember, again, this one of my segues and an anecdote, but I remember we played the British Championships there and I didn't score a single ace on the first day on that course. It took, I think, to the second round on the morning on the second day, and I scored an ace, and you could tell, obviously, I was a bit of a cheer for myself, a bit of a yee-haw, come on.
And this was on the miniature golf course, was it?
It was on the miniature, and it was, I think it's one of those courses, because there wasn't a lot of height, or there weren't pirate ships, there weren't gimmicks, there wasn't a loop. If you looked at it, you'd think, oh, that looks flat. That looks a bit boring. That doesn't look like crazy golf or adventure golf. But believe me, and again, if the wind was coming in as well from the sea, I mean, and if it was a bit rainy as well, yeah, it was a real course, a proper tournament course that was. So be good to play there again if I could, if you could recreate that.
Yeah, okay. And you mentioned the Arnold Palmer course there at Hastings as well. I'm not sure we've ever discussed the history. So for our international listeners, can you just give a quick rundown of why it's called the Arnold Palmer course and the sort of history around it associated with the UK?
Yeah, well, for the American listeners, they could probably tell you the story better than I, but But it was Arnold Palmer, the man himself, and his agent, Mark McCormack, who went on to found IMG, so massive in the world of sports and sports marketing, sports sponsorship. Arnold Palmer was pretty much the first sports superstar who licensed his name. And he licensed his name to pretty much anything and everything. With an element of quality control, but if there was an opportunity, we'd license it. So, again, there's all manner, you know, Arnold Palmer, the drink, the iced tea, if you look at the Arnold Palmer Corporation, you know, so many different products and services were under the Arnold Palmer brand, and some of them golf-related, others not. And it was seen, you know, what's popular. This is the 1960s, so what's popular, you know, seeing mini golf courses in a boom period, some branded ones, some unbranded, putt-putt, obviously in the US, gaining momentum as well. And so what was created was the line of Arnold Palmer putting courses and driving ranges. So there were a combination. And so they started in the US, and there were others in Japan, I believe South Africa, and a few other countries around the world as well. Much the same as putt-putt. You know, there are still now courses there in South Africa, and was a couple of putt-putt in the UK at one point. But whereas in continental Europe, they were developing the Etonet, the Beton, and the Felt, and Swedish Felt, that was the sort of courses that were being created there. But in the English-speaking world, so again, Australia and New Zealand were following down the crazy golf, mini golf, putt-putt or Arnold Palmer route. And so the first Arnold Palmer crazy golf in the UK opened in Coventry. And there's so little information. And this is why your time machine is fantastic, to travel to all these places so we can document it all for future generations of mini golfers. But there's no trace of that original Arnold Palmer. But you can still see, examples still around the UK, Prestatyn, which I understand is hosting a tournament quite soon and has hosted tournaments in the past, is a fantastic example. And I was recently down in Bognor Regis, down in Sussex, and I played the Arnold Palmer there, which was the last Arnold Palmer to be built in the UK. So that was built in, I believe, late 90s. So brand new Arnold Palmers were still being built to the original specifications in the 1990s. And because Arnold Palmer so famous as a golfer, and the courses had tournaments that run, they had professionals, they had, you know, training programs, you name it, any way to get people into mini golf or golf, they were doing it. And it's one of those things that, you know, after the boom period, and you know, and it tailed off, and people weren't necessarily interested in it, it kind of fizzled out. And that, again, that mini golf heritage and experience is kind of lost until you've got organisations then like the BMGA starting up in the late 90s to, you know, trying to evolve the game and to create tournaments and a way for and an outlet. But you know, it's not new. Tournaments have been around since, you know, since 1867. and every year since 1867 there's been a tournament played in one shape or another,
Yeah, I think for anybody that's played Hastings, which would be a lot of our listeners, if you've never played another one, get out there and play a second one. Because you get this bizarre feeling of deja vu. It's like you've been there. It's like you've not been there. You kind of know the lines, but you definitely don't. It is fascinating. I'll be playing in Prestatyn in the coming weeks. So I look forward to that. I've never been. But there's a fantastic one I enjoy in Southend. And there's another fantastic one in Weston-super-Mare. They're all over the UK still, so have a look at the link.
Okay, so from Hastings and the super challenging miniature golf course and the fantastic Arnold Palmer course, Richard, where to next?
For this one, I think driver's choice. I think this way I kind of wanted to navigate. So I think driver's choice on this one. But I will give you some limits on your choice. Right. I don't want you to take anywhere. So I have never played the putt-putt version of the game. So I played crazy golf and mini golf and grass putting and Etonet and Beton and Swedish felt. But I've never played Kobe golf or Stern golf either in Germany. So they're two formats in the game. So if we can squeeze some of them in as well, that'd be interesting. But putt-putt has always fascinated me because, again, it was another type of course that you know, sprung up in mini golf boom period. And when you look at the history and the heritage of putt-putt, there's so much depth and it's so interesting. The fact there's only ever been four recorded perfect games.
Yeah.
I mean, you can play putt-putt, but to master it, it's another one that like Etonet or Beton, you know, you can try, but, you know, the obstacles are so, so tricky. But I think it's just got that. One of the things I like about mini golf is the aesthetic. It's not always about. So I might have visited, you know, all these hundreds and hundreds of thousands of courses, but I haven't played them all because a lot of them, you know, we visit out of season or they're closed or they're abandoned or they're derelict or they're haunted or I don't want to go near them, you know, they're unplayable. But there is something to me, the aesthetic of a mini golf course, and it's something that conjures up nostalgia or just interest or just the design, and it's just something about it. And putt-putt has that standardized look, but it's got that Americana. I think it's the roadside Americana, the signage, the branding, the look of it. So I mean, in terms of putt-putt now, you've got driver's choice, but the limit is you're looking at the USA, you're looking at South Africa, Australia. I'm not sure, and again, we will be corrected. I will be corrected if there are other putt-putt courses that still exist or that we've forgotten elsewhere in the world, but certainly none in the UK anymore. But that would be just something that I would really enjoy having, I'll say a round on, but there's no such thing as one round with me. It'll be multiple rounds. I'd be there for a month, again, just playing putt-putt.
So where we can go is Martinez in Augusta, Georgia. It's hosting, just recently it hosted the National Putt-Putt Championships, and we're going to recap that in our next episode. So it's a fantastic place to go. As you say, it's got that Americana look and a great theme to the course. I believe two courses there, and I've seen videos of it being played back in the 80s, 90s. I believe it's retained all the original hole design. So I can definitely recommend that to go. Okay, so Augusta, Georgia now. Where to next?
Okay, the year is 1972.
Oh, okay.
So again, well, I think we were in Augusta in 2022. So let's go back to 1972. Mm-hmm. And we're going to Germany, West Germany to be precise, and Munich and the Olympia Park in Munich. And the Athlete Village. Obviously, this time machine has been able to replicate us some visitor access accreditation to get in there. But this is another course that if we stepped out and looked at it now and then travelled back to the present day, we wouldn't be, well, we might be surprised to see it still there, but it actually looks pretty much the same as it did back in 1972. So,
cool. Okay.
For the Olympic Games, the Athlete Village of the 1972 Olympic Games had an Etonet miniature golf course created. And the legacy, the Olympic legacy of those games was that course stayed. and it is still there. And if you, again, it's one of those courses that is on my to-do list to head over there and actually have a game. And I think it's one of the courses that would be fun to have a tournament on that as well. From what I can tell, there never have been any tournaments played on it, though, because there is no club base there, and Germany, right, I believe, runs more on a club-based system than us with our open system here in the UK. There's an I believe 18-hole Etonet course. So again, that would be interesting to see and play. And I think it's having an Olympic connection as well. I think, you know, one of the aims of the World Mini Golf Federation is to get mini golf into the Olympics. It'd just be an interesting place to play, wouldn't it?
I have been to this course out in Munich. I did go out to visit because they have the original Bayern Munich Stadium, which was also, I believe, at one point the German National Stadium is there in this fantastic park. They also have the BMW Museum, but they do have this Etonet course. And before I knew about professional mini golf, I stumbled upon it and I played it. I guess as to why it's so quiet, it is the least welcome I have ever been at a course. But in hindsight, I understand why, because I now understand you're not meant to stand in the lanes when you play a tournament. But unfortunately, with the language difference, nobody could get that across. So every single time I went to play a shot, I got shouted at. And I thought, how unwelcoming is this place? But in hindsight, that makes sense. So I would go and give it another go.
That's brilliant, brilliant that you played it. The interesting thing is, because you see a lot of courses where you're not allowed to, again, yeah, this thing about not standing in the lane when you play your shot. But you see some courses for the beginner where it says verboten, painted in big letters on every single lane on some courses. And again, it's just, it's wild. You can understand why, because they are delicate courses to play. But yeah, you need to let people know that you shouldn't be standing in the lane as you play. But that's fantastic. Did you win? Did you win your game there? Or did you play
against the crowd? Of course I've done well. I believe in hindsight, I've had a look at what people would usually score. Maybe not so much. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I do actually still have the scorecard as well, so I might dig that out.
Okay, so we're currently in Munich, Germany. And perhaps as we're nearing the end of our trip, Munich, Germany would be a good place to go sneak off, maybe have a beer in one of the beer halls before we get back into the machine. Richard, where to next?
We've only got a limited amount of petrol in the tank of the time machine, haven't we? So we've got, there's only two more courses on the list to go to. So we've been to the 1972 Olympic Games. Okay. The next one I'd like to take us to is the 1904 Olympic Games. So we're heading to St. Louis, and we're going to the 1904 Olympic Games. You might be wondering why. But we're going to a place called Glen Echo Country Club, where we are going to be stepping out and playing a 9-hole putting course. So again, grass putting, it's not artificial. Uh-huh. You know, it does count as mini golf, whether it's, you know, it can be pitch and putt, it can be par three. This one, specifically grass putting, but this is a mini golf course. And hopefully we're going to be able to sneak our way into a competition that's about to take place.
Right.
You know, as an English competitor, as a UK athlete, myself and Simon and Andrew, maybe you competing under the Czech flag.
I've still got my UK passport. So technically under the UK flag, yeah.
Okay, so the UK delegation of ourselves stepping out, and we're going to be playing in the tournament. A 9-hole putting competition was held at Glen Echo Country Club in St. Louis in the USA in 1904 at the Olympic Games. And this Olympic Games was one of the last times that the golf was in before it was back in the Games in Rio. I believe it was Rio when big golf returned. Mm-hmm. But as a side element. It was never officially recorded in the records as being an official event, but the golf was, and all of the golfers who were in the main golf tournament in the games also, like say, played a miniature golf tournament under floodlight, I believe, as part of their championship. So we're going to try and sneak the UK players in, hopefully for a gold, silver, and bronze finish in the putting competition. I'm sure our skills in the mini golf game that we've developed over time, we're all about the putting. So these golfers that are driving for show will put them in their place, as it were. So it's just an interesting, one of these interesting quirks when you start looking at the history of mini golf. You think, most people think, oh, it's, you know, it started in the 80s or 90s, it's adventure golf. But really, the history and heritage of mini golf, you know, it stretches back. And it's been played in some of the strangest locations.
Okay, so we're getting back into the machine. We're perhaps a little bit slower because we've got some heavy metal around our necks. Where to next?
Well, this one, we're looking at the last, I think, course, and it's we're going to go to the, again, it's back to the 1930s, so going fast forward in time, but not too far, and we're going to Oxford Street in London, and we're going to Selfridge's department store, mm-hmm. and we're going to head up onto the roof, so maybe we land on the roof,
yeah,
or take the stairs or the elevator. And we're going up to the roof because on the roof there was a crazy golf course. And this is one of the more famous crazy golf courses on the rooftops. And as we talked about earlier, at the time in the 1920s and 30s, New York City, hundreds and hundreds of rooftop courses. And Selfridges created a free-to-play crazy golf course for their customers and as an attraction atop their roof. And if you see photos of it, you know, if you were to colorize it, it would look like a lot of quirky pop-up crazy golf courses you see now. So there's, you know, hoops and loops and jumps and tunnels and pipes and different obstacles that are definitely recognizable, you know, 100 years later. And I just think that would be a great place to play. But also it's a place that we did play 10 years ago. So to celebrate London 2012 Olympics and the summer of sport, and also to celebrate, you know, 90 years or so since there was 80, 90 years since the crazy golf was on the roof. Selfridges did create for the summer a pop-up crazy golf course. And we did have a tournament there a few years ago, you know, during that summer. There was the course was holding tournaments and held a grand final, and I'll just shoehorn in, I did win them. And then there was a pro tournament as well. And I think I was sixth in that, maybe worse. But that was a tournament that was held. I think Michael Smith won it. Possibly Michael Smith won it. Might not be a shock to many people, but I think Michael Smith won it. We'll dig out the records and the results of that tournament. But the that course in 2012, that course though was nothing like the original. Right. It was made by some dessert architects, some jelly masters, right, who made a cake and baked goods themed miniature golf course. they realised landmarks of London in cakes and jelly form, and it was very very crazy, very colourful. Very crazy, but also very historic. So again, to see, you know, in a way, is that reinventing, you know, we might see it as new, but it's actually been done before, and, you know, that history and heritage of mini golf. So I think that would be a nice place for us to finish. And again, we've been traveling around, so it'd be a nice place for some afternoon tea, perhaps as well, 1930s Art Deco surroundings and afternoon tea there before we're celebrating all of these wins we've had along the way. So some champagne, I think, would go down the street, and then head back to the joy of 2022.
Brilliant. Well, what a trip, and I'll toast that as well. So, started off St. Andrews on the first ever mini golf course, and along the way we went to the first crazy golf course, the course, Richard, where you fell in love with the game, and one of the courses where I fell in love with the game as well, frequently Arnold Palmer course in Bognor Regis. We've been to some courses that we've never been to before. Myrtle Beach and Putt-Putt in Augusta, Georgia, and then finishing off with some historic courses, two Olympic Games, and as you say, finishing in Selfridges. Thank you so much, Richard, for taking us around to all of those wonderful courses. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks a lot for sharing these different courses with us today. Hopefully for anyone listening, it serves as a reminder of why you play the game. Even within this podcast, we all get so competitive. We've been so bogged down lately in the psychology of the game and interviewing winners and all these fantastic things about what you can do if you compete in mini golf. But take a step back and just appreciate why you fell in love in the first place with the game. I doubt anyone comes to play competitive mini golf without a background of at least a bit in their childhood or finding a few courses they loved. So next time you feel a bit jaded or you're not enjoying playing, just take a step back and go and, you know, don't forget why you fell in love with it. On a personal level, I've done that. I've pulled out of a couple of majors that I was going to play, and I've went back to why I actually enjoy the game. And I'm enjoying it so much more with these things in my calendar. And I can understand exactly why Richard travels about doing this. So, yeah, thanks a lot for sharing with us.
Yeah, thank you. And I hope our listeners as well have enjoyed coming on this virtual journey with us. If you haven't done already, please check out Richard's blog. As I said, the link will be in the show notes. If you have any courses, maybe you know some Myrtle Beach courses or some Putt-Putt courses or just some courses that you think are fun and Richard hasn't checked out yet, please get in touch. I'm sure he'll really appreciate it. Richard, thank you so much for sharing with us today. And as you said earlier, I hope that we can find some time to also talk about the Crazy Golf Museum, because that would be a very interesting conversation as well.
Top stuff. Thank you very much, both. It was a great speaking with you. And I look forward to us having a game again in real life. We've only played a few games, and they've been tournaments as well, haven't they? That we've when we played, we've never played a friendly round against each other yet, the three of us. So I'm sure it would be degenerate into very competitiveness.
Yeah.
Bound to. But it will be good for us to meet up somewhere that maybe somewhere that none of us have ever visited before. So it's, you know, level playing field, and let's just have fun.
Course.
Yeah, see what happens.
I'm up for it.
Yeah, count me in.
Cool. Okay, thank you everyone for listening. All that's left to say is goodbye from Richard.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Simon.
Yeehaw, come on. Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me. Goodbye.